It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. Again, that address, by the way, email address is Cecil Harvell at HarvellandCollins.com, or you can go to the website HarvellandCollins.com. And remember to spell out the word and, please, HarvellandCollins.com. Or you can give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. And as I said at the very opening, we're joined by Cecil today. And with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. I hope you're doing well.
Doing well now that Thanksgiving has passed and I have to start worrying about Christmas. But
Some people tell me, Lockwood, they say, but Cecil, you've always been full of turkey.
Oh, no. Wait. No, I'll tell you what. It has been, it's amazing. We're coming to the end of the year.
Yeah, it is.
What a year. So what's on tap?
So Lockwood, we're going to talk about today the importance of the durable power of attorney. Again, the importance of the durable power of attorney. It's interesting being a lawyer in the area of trust and estates because so many of the phone calls into the office or the appointment schedules are, you know, I'm coming in to get a will. And, of course, the will is so very important. That's true. But I tell you, Lockwood, the horror stories of not having a properly drafted durable power of attorney are things that we just deal with every week. And so I kind of want to dissect that subject matter yet again. And we start with just the definition, which is that a durable power of attorney, Lockwood, is a document whereby we grant our legal authority the right to sign checks, to sign tax returns, to settle lawsuits, to deal with insurance settlements, anything of a legal nature. We delegate that authority to our agent under a written and signed document known as a durable power of attorney. And the word durable just simply means that the power granted in the document continue to operate during the duration of our incapacity or our inability to act or even our desire to not act. There are certain times that we have a power of attorney in place, and it's just because the principal is out of town, out of country, or just simply no longer wishes to deal with with their legal affairs. Sometimes they're very competent. They're, you know, maybe in their 70s or 80s. Mm-hmm. They're competent. They're doing fine. But they just turn to their son or their daughter and they say, you know, I really would like now for you to take over these matters for me. And so here we go, Lockwood. The definition is just simply a legal document whereby we grant legal authority to another, and the other is known as the agent under the power of attorney. Now, we all need this document, Lockwood, and quite frankly, as we turn, believe it or not, 18 years old. I had folks in the office just very recently who have a very highly functioning special needs child, a child with a certain setback in his life. He's 30 years old or so. He's not married. He lives independently. He holds down a job. But their question was, well, what if, you know, he's in an accident? What if he has a medical setback? What if we need to deal with his disability benefits, anything of that nature? Should we have a power of attorney? And the answer is absolutely, absolutely. This young person, who is competent, even though he has a setback, a birth order setback, This child still needs a power of attorney, a grant of authority to his dad and mom or his brother, sister, to be able to handle his legal affairs if for some reason he's unable to. So we all need this document, Lockwood. We particularly need it as we get older, of course, and become you know, frail, subject to fraud, subject to undue influences, things of that nature. Again, this power of attorney can just be a weight, can be a big weight lifted by having this document within our list of important papers.
If I may, I would like to interrupt here very quickly because it's a stunning thought. I know it's hard to believe. I don't look like I'm old enough. I have grandchildren. And they are matured. They're 21. And I'm thinking, I had never even considered this. They are now out of the nest, if you will. So if there's some event, let's say something horrible, like an automobile accident, and they're in a coma, I would have thought automatically the parents would be able to step right in and conduct affairs for those children. However, I'm beginning to think, well, if you don't have that power of attorney, that durable power of attorney, there may be some legal challenges. Am I correct on that?
You are absolutely correct. Wow. Let's keep in mind that these grandchildren, as you speak of, Lockwood, are adults now.
Right,
they're over the age of 18 in the state of North Carolina,
right.
And they are adults. And as an adult, we do not have the authority to enter into banking relationships, deal with any kind of, you know, investment maybe that their grandmother or granddaddy left them in an account, deal with any kind of insurance settlement, as you say, if they're in a terrible accident, deal with any of their health care issues. It is not Lockwood automatic. It is not automatic at all. And absent the documentation, the legal writing of a power of attorney, the parents, unfortunately, are forced to go to the superior court and file for guardianship over their, quote, very young but adult age child, and proceed under the guardianship statutes to then have the legal authority to settle any lawsuit, to handle any insurance claim, to deal with any medical issues. All of those things will then fall within the province of a guardianship proceeding. And we really like to avoid a guardianship proceeding, if at all possible, Lockwood. So the importance of the durable power of attorney, I mean, it is so very important. And of course, one element of it, of the deciphering of it today is, of course, this element that it people think of it as something that, you know, only my granddaddy needs, my 80-year-old granddaddy.
Right.
He needs the power of attorney, but I don't need one. Well, because I'm very young. Well, that's just not the case. We all need this document. Now, the next element, Lockwood, that we should talk about with regard to this document is that it needs to be very specific in terms of the grants of authority. After all, some third party, a bank, a Department of Motor Vehicles, the Internal Revenue Service, the stock company, the bond company, whatever the case might be, they are going to be relying on this document. And unless it has a very specific grant of authority with details, then as you can imagine, they're not going to be very comfortable with it. They're going to reject it. And so do not just print off these forms from the internet, Lockwood, or from some textbook somewhere, and hope and a prayer that they will be that the document will be enforceable. North Carolina has an extensive and very detailed statute on the durable power of attorney. And it goes on in great detail about the grants of authority. And we, as lawyers, we are able to prepare a document that incorporates in by reference all of the grants of authority that are included in the North Carolina statutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we do that as a, if you will, boilerplate provision. But the bottom line is that we also know that there are certain grants of authority that stock companies and banks and other financial institutions, insurance companies, if you will, like to see. And we have those kind of right up front at the beginning of the document, so that when the document is forwarded to the person who's going to rely on it, I really should say not so much a person, but more an institution, because it usually is an institution, a bank, a stock company, an insurance company, the Internal Revenue Service.
Yes.
Yeah, it usually is an institution that is relying on these grants of authority, and they need to be very specific in nature.
We're talking.
Our listeners need to maybe pull their, if they have a durable power of attorney, I'm sure some of our listeners do. If you pull out your power of attorney and you see a lot of initialing on it, where you initialed here and initialed there, again, that's a document that, in my opinion, as a lawyer with a lot of experience in this area, Lockwood, you need to have that document updated.
Okay.
And you need to tell your lawyer that you do not want the short form. You do not want a power of attorney where you initial here and initial there. Because, again, there isn't enough specific language for the institution.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to question it. Now, yes, we then can write a letter saying that the principal initialed this line, and initialing this line means the following, and wait 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks for the legal department of the bank or the legal department of the stock company to approve that, and ask their questions, go back and forth, back and forth. Well, guess what? All of that then is billed to the client.
Right. And it's time. It's also you have maybe something that is time sensitive that has to be dealt with.
Correct.
So
exactly.
I'm going to take a quick break here. I just want to make mention of this. Two things. We're going to come back to. I have a myriad of questions, but I of course will wait till the end. We're talking with Cecil Harvell today about the concept of a durable power of attorney, and I'm going to say as we go to the break, Cecil, I am sending all of this information off to my children and grandchildren. This is a stunning story. I have so many questions to ask here in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell. We're talking the durable power of attorney. Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And by the way, to remind you, don't hesitate to reach out to them, 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We're talking again with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and again, we're talking about the issue of durable power of attorney. Cecil, I interrupted you a few moments ago.
Sure.
I apologize, but this is, I've got so many questions to ask, but I'll wait till the end. Continue on about the issue of the importance. Now you were talking about the need for a long-form power of attorney. Don't cut corners here, is what you're telling me.
That's correct, because Even with the longer form power of attorney, and some of our listeners are just saying, oh, yes, aha, Mr. Harvell is so correct.
Right.
When you drop off these documents, and I'm talking about, you know, very wonderful local bankers, our local banks, you know, they're all great. First Citizens, Wells Fargo, Truist, Bank of America, State Employees Credit Union, when you drop off your power of attorney, the very first thing that gets said to you is, well, we do now need to send this to Raleigh or to Charlotte, and our lawyers, the legal department, will approve it. And why don't you, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Jones, come on back tomorrow? It usually doesn't take very long. And that is the kind of what we hear. And our listeners are saying right now to themselves, Lockwood, yes, that's absolutely what I was told. Well, that's wonderful, and the document will go up to the legal department, Lockwood, and be approved very promptly if it's a well-drafted document.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is a document with just a bunch of initials on it, if it's a document that is a short form, if it's a document that's off the internet or doesn't conform to the North Carolina statute, if it doesn't reference the North Carolina statute, then the legal department is going to begin to feel, as you would expect, Lockwood, uncomfortable with that document.
Right.
And if they reject that document and there's a time-sensitive issue, or even just, they're just not going to be comfortable releasing funds to an agent and putting themselves out on not solid ground because of the fact that the power of attorney is not well drafted.
Uh-huh.
So institutions are not in the business of making our problem their problem.
Right.
They're going to look at these documents very carefully, and they're going to review it. And we then need to hope that our document has been well prepared, has a lot of detail in it, has been properly executed, is in conformance with the North Carolina statute. Now, all of these things sound complicated, Lockwood, but they are not. This is a very straightforward document, 7-8 pages long. You know, it is not expensive. I mean, we're talking potentially less than $100
Wow.
for your lawyer to prepare one of these documents in good form. But critically important from the beginning to the end.
You know, the aspect, and again, I'm still stunned by the comment you made about 18 years of age and a few other questions I want to ask, but the fact that you have children that are now, and I say this broadly, that are now out of the house, they're living someplace else, they're in college maybe, they're over the age of 18, so therefore they've hit the age of maturity, if I understand that correctly, Cecil, that
yes.
you, as a parent, If you're concerned about your loved one, need to have that durable power of attorney. I never would have thunk that, as I like
yeah,
to say.
I understand.
I never.
Well, I have Lockwood. I'll fess up here. I have 20-somethings, two of them,
uh-huh.
wonderful, gorgeous, incredible children. And the moment that they turned 18, 19, I said, guess what? You know, Christopher, guess what, Elizabeth Ann? We need to go down to the office and you need to sign a power of attorney to your dad and your mom, okay?
Yeah.
And they, of course, are asking questions. What does that mean? I said, well, it just means that if something were to happen, your mom and your dad have authority
right.
to be able to handle, you know, your legal affairs. And you know, this is a cobbler that does have the shoes. Okay,
yeah.
I had this done
yes.
for my very children. And I know that lots of folks are listening, and they've had that done too. But durable powers of attorney are not just for the aged. Another example are, you know, we kind of picked on the 20-somethings, but just wonderful, you know, mom and dad in their young 40s who have, you know, 9-year-olds and 7-year-olds at home in elementary school. Well, what if one day dad is driving back from work and is in, you know, a terrible accident? What if mom, you know, is out at the grocery store and something happens on her trip back home? So, and here we're talking about, you know, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, people who are in the prime of life and in the prime of health, thinking, oh, wow, I don't need a power of attorney. I'm married. And
right.
Got two children in grammar school, and I'm in great health and going to the gym every day, and I don't need a power of attorney. Well, guess what? You do if for some reason there's a tragic turn of events. And then think about it, Lockwood. Your spouse,
uh-huh.
the person that you're spending your life with and that you have a great deal of love and respect for, is now in a tremendous trying to emotionally support you, psychologically support you, support the children,
mm-hmm.
deal with all of the things that we have to do in and around our home, and yet, because we don't have a power of attorney for our 35, 40-year-old father or mother, they're in a lawyer's office as well while the children are at school prepping up for a guardianship hearing. It's tragic circumstances, and believe me, Lockwood, it happens.
That was my next question. I was curious about a husband and wife arrangement. So even in that case, a durable power of attorney is an imperative. I'm using the word imperative. This is something that no one normally thinks about, Cecil. I'm sitting here thinking, something that needs to be taken care of. The question goes to, let's go back to the teenagers the young adults, and they do a power of attorney. And this would also apply, I guess, with the spousal arrangements as well in the case of a divorce. But you have a power of attorney. The children have a power of attorney, or the parents do, a durable power of attorney for their children. Then their children get married and arrangements made, and they want to alter that power of attorney. What is the process? Do you put a time frame on it? Is there a process for, I'll use the word, revocation of a power of attorney? How does that, what's the process there?
Well, just like there's the creation of the document, Lockwood, there's the, quote, revocation, or the, if you will, destruction of the document, the taking the legal validity of it away. There's also, of course, and can be, a modification. And your question kind of aligns with the question of just, when do I have my important documents reviewed? And, of course, generally speaking, we tell everybody 5 to 7 years, maybe even 10 years. But if there is a material change in one's life, and getting married certainly is, and or getting divorced certainly is another material change in one's life, then any material change like that immediately means that you go to your important papers and pull them out, and go back to your lawyer and give the circumstances to the lawyer, and more than likely have the document, redrafted.
Okay.
So yes, absolutely. Neither one of my children right now are married, but the bottom line is that, when they do get married, they will probably remember that their dad had them get a power of attorney when they turned 18, 19. And the bottom line is that they now need to look at it with their spouse. So yes, that's kind of a material change in circumstance that would dictate that we look at the document. We like to have the document to have alternates. Mm-hmm. Lockwood.
Okay.
All of them, from the beginning to the end. That's not an age related issue. Just the document itself should have the appointment of an agent number one, and then an agent number two,
mm-hmm.
and even an agent number three, depending on the circumstances. Like, for instance, if I do have elderly clients in the office. Sometimes they might say, well, I really want to name my brother,
mm-hmm.
but my brother is also, 75 years old,
right.
Okay? Well, that might be the time we can certainly name the brother, but then we name an alternate, and then maybe we even name a number three, because of the fact that the initial appointment is someone who is, of advanced age as well. So as you begin to see, Lockwood, the lawyer needs to listen carefully to the facts, ask lots of questions. Who is John?
Right.
And then the client says, well, John is my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if I'm talking to an 80-year-old, well, how old is your brother? Uh-huh. Well, he's 80 years old, too.
Right. Yep.
We need a number two. And then, I'll go ahead and name, my niece or mm-hmm. my nephew. Well, how old are they? Where do they live? Things of that nature. Now, in terms of the where do you live, you do not have to live in the state of North Carolina to be an agent under a power of attorney, nor do you need to live in the state of North Carolina to be an executor. Let me put that out there real quickly, because a lot of people think that you have to appoint a resident of North Carolina mm-hmm. to be your executor and to be your agent under a power of attorney, but you do not. The law does not require that your fiduciary be a resident of the state of North Carolina.
All right. Several questions here. Issue of appointing the agents for the power of attorney, should the individuals identify or notify the agent? Oh, you've been, by the way, you've been no, you've been identified as an agent for my power of attorney. I'm thinking that's pretty illogical assumption there, but make sure. And then the other question, where do we keep these powers of attorney? But first, the question about the agents. You know, is there some sort of communications that should at least be initiated?
Well, we believe, it is our opinion at Harvell and Collins that the more that a client feels that they can communicate, the better.
Okay.
There are certain clients that do not, that want to hold these issues very, very close to the chest, and we have to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are no other overriding reasons, our suggestion would be to encourage communication.
Okay.
So yes, I have done a document. This is where the document's located. This is who my lawyer is.
Okay.
You are number one in the document, et cetera, et cetera. So communication is very helpful in almost all circumstances. Lockwood.
So the other aspect of this, and we'll bring it to a close here shortly with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, the issue of durable power of attorney, a topic that is truly a gift to the audience because I'm confident, Cecil, many of us, myself included, never considered the circumstances for our children as they were growing up. Now, of course, fortunately, we were lucky, but I think everybody needs to be very aware. You do need a power of attorney for your durable power of attorney for your children. Yes, for your children. The other aspect of this, Cecil, related to the issue of, the document. So if there's something that's significant that happens, let's say, to my wife and I have the durable power of attorney, do I have a copy with me when I go to these various agents, these various institutions, and show them or send them a copy? Or what's the process for that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because it leads up to this issue, which is that when, Lockwood, we act pursuant to the power of attorney, then we do record it in the Register of Deeds.
Oh.
The document is usually not recorded when it's prepared and signed by the principal at the lawyer's office.
Uh-huh.
The reason for that is that the document might change, the appointments might change, it might need to be updated based on some of the stuff that we've talked about this afternoon, Lockwood, all of the above. Now, if the principal is, 85, 90, 95 years old and is not doing well at all and we're going to immediately activate the power of attorney, then we will record it right then and there. As the document is signed and notarized and then recorded. But these other factual circumstances that we've talked about, the young person or even the middle-aged parent, the document usually in those circumstances is not recorded because, again, it may change. But if for some reason we are confronted with an issue where we need to use the power of attorney, then it would need to be recorded.
All right. We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins as we wrap it up. Cecil, I think this is I'm shaking my head. I'm never, ever considered what you just shared with us and the importance of having that durable power of attorney. You said it doesn't take very long to accomplish. Am I correct on that?
No, not at all. It doesn't. And the listeners need to just decide who their first choice will be. Their second choice, and maybe even potentially a third choice, call and make an appointment. We can get the document prepared or call your lawyer of record and get them to do it for you. But again, no short forms, in my opinion, as an attorney. I'm not saying that they're not legal. I'm just saying that my experience now, which is pushing 30 years here, Lockwood, is that those open up the Pandora box of questions.
Right. It's preferable, the long form. Take the time. Do it up front, not after the fact. Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, to remind you that number, 252 area code 726-9050. Every reason to make that phone call immediately, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com And with that, Cecil, thank you for your time. Great program.
Thank you, Lockwood. I enjoyed it. Bye-bye now.
Let's talk legal on the Talk Station.